for the enthusiasm that you bring to our camp.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Dr. Neal, thank you for that gracious introduction. It's a joy to be back on the campus of Southeastern again. And I bring you greetings from Georgia. Bring you special greetings to my constituents here that are here in training. God's preparing you. We just want to make sure that you know God's calling you back to Georgia now. We need you there. So don't get scattered around here. But Dr. Neal, it's good to be with you here today. And part of my bio that's not updated is that we also have a three-week little grandson. So God has blessed our second daughter with. So we will compare notes after the service. But thank you very much. I also bring you greetings from our son, Jim, who was here with you last year. And we were had the honor of being at your service in May. To watch many of your graduates walk across the stage to begin a life of ministry that God's called them to. Jim and Stephanie are doing very, very well. He regretted that he could not be with me. He was planning to come when we set this date, and he is in training with the North American Mission Board for church planning. He and Stephanie are starting a church in North Forsyth County, and they are just absolutely excited. Stephanie's teaching at the high school there in North Forsyth, close to where they'll be starting the church, and things are moving very, very rapidly for them. But God is leading and guiding Jim and Stephanie in a way that I think would honor him and honor this institution as from the preparation that he had gotten here. He has the boldness to go forth and to do the work of the gospel and preparing for. For the ministry that that God's called him to as far as church planning and starting a church there. So I know that he and Stephanie would welcome your prayers as you all think of them and remember them. But I want to admit to you right up front today that I'm, even in public service, I'm intimidated to stand before you. I will admit that I've never had a class in homiletics, and that'll be entirely clear here in a few minutes. But I'm honored to have the opportunity to visit with you and just share some random thoughts with a group of people that I'm excited that God has his hand on you and has called you into his ministry. If you look in God's word, you'll see that my job as public servant, as governor, and your job as public servant, as minister, is not all that different. God calls us to some of the same criteria and to the same specifications, and I would hope that your goal as graduates here, as students here, hoping to be graduates, but as students here preparing for the ministry, I would hope your goal would be the best that you could be in your field, to be, if you want to be a pastor, to be the best pastor, to be the best that you can be in whatever area God has called you to be. I hope that your aspirations and your expectations are set high. And I never aspired to be governor of Georgia. Our story was a little bit different in that I am, just as you, God called in my job. And mine was a compelling that I would have been like Isaiah. Had I not obeyed, I would have been out of the will of God. But it was a compulsion to trust and obey as God spoke to both me and Mary in our efforts. And he called us to simply obey. But in obeying, I wanted to be the best obedient governor that I could be in that area. And when I read that and I tell people that, I don't tell them from a vain standpoint. I'm reminded of Matthew 20, verse 20. You know the story. Jesus was late in his ministry, and his disciples had not quite grasped the fact that he was actually going to die, going to be crucified. And he was trying to convince them of that. And they were still had their mind set on this earthly kingdom and about how things would be set up on the earth. And mother of Zebedee's children came and wanted to make an appeal on behalf of her sons, because she knew they were the best disciples Jesus had, as any good mother would want to do that. Mothers can identify with that her sons were the best, and she wanted to make sure they had their proper place. So she came beseeching to Jesus on their behalf for a special place to sit on the right hand and the left hand. And Jesus was a little taken aback by the request and asked her and them if they knew what they were asking for. And they assured him that they did. And he gave them the formula for how to become the best. And I was a formula that I want to talk to you this morning, because there are really three things that I want to talk to you about today, just thoughts. I want to talk to you about the attitude of service and the attitude of worship. And then we'll think of the attitude of thoughtfulness. But in Matthew 20, we see again that story. And Jesus' formula for how to become the best is laid out for us there. I think all of us in public service, but particularly those in the ministry. This is Jesus' call to the ministry and to the mission. And in the verses 25, actually 24, says that when the 10 heard of the request of James and John, they became a little indignant over their request. They would try to ease in, using their mother to ease into the next to Jesus. But in verse 25, Jesus kind of lays it all out for them. He says, "But Jesus called unto them and said, Ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority over them." This world, this secular world, this world in which I live, the world of politics these days is all about power. And unfortunately, the world of religion oftentimes gets all about power. Jesus gives us the formula of how to be powerful in His sight. Listen in verse 26. He says, you're in a culture right now where you're dominated. And you see the Gentiles, the Romans, lord it over you. And those that are powerful are lorded over you and make you comply. But in verse 26, "But it shall not be so among you, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister or servant." Let him be your servant. This thing of God, this supernatural ability God gives us as He quickens our spirit, just turns everything upside down. In politics, we're consumed with power and control. And if we allow ourselves to go in the secular vein, we would try just to gather in power under ourselves. But God says that's absolutely 180 degrees from His methodology. Those who would be great among you, let him be your servant. And then He goes further. "And whosoever will be chief or first or governor among you, let him be your bond servant, your bond slave. Let who would be first be chief of all." Now you say, what's that got to do with me? Men and women of the ministry are going to face the same pressures. In your churches, in your ministries, you'll face the same pressures of how to influence and how to lead. This is about leadership. Jesus is teaching His disciples about the supernatural calling of servant leader leadership. And in your places of service, God will refer you back to this. Whosoever will be first, whosoever will be pastor among you, let him be servant of all. And then He gives the example. "Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give His life." The ultimate service, to give His life as a ransom for many. Now that's what we're called to do. That's how we are to function. The world doesn't understand that, and the world will not accept that. God will supernaturally use our service in that attitude of service to then draw the leadership function that He will enable unto us, that attitude of service. You think about it. We're called to serve, and in Luke chapter 10, we see some servants. Let's turn over just to Luke chapter 10 for a second. You may recognize 10:38 as the recollection of Mary and Martha. And you say, well, we need to serve. Look at the example in 10:38 of Mary and Martha as Jesus comes there. "It came to pass as they went, they entered a certain village. A certain woman named Martha received Him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard His word. But Martha was cumbered about much." What was she doing? She was serving. "And came to Him and said, Lord, dost Thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? speak to her, bid her that she would come and help me. What did Jesus, what was his response? Jesus has called us to be servants. Martha was serving, but Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. You know what trumps service? Worship. Unless we have a spirit of worship and serve in the spirit of worship, we are serving in vain. We're serving in our own power and our own flesh. Here's a great example right here of two women. What did Mary? What did Martha choose? She had invited guests into her house. Things have to be done. Things will have to be done in the church. Things will have to be done in your ministry. Things have to be done here at the seminary. You have to get things done operationally to make things happen, for classes to start, for buildings to be prepared, for the lawns to be kept. All these things have to be done. Yes, God knows that. But what did he say to Martha? There are times for that. First of all, there has to be a attitude of worship. We can eat later, Martha, but right now, Mary is sitting at my feet, listening, and we're fellowshipping and worshiping. Let me just issue a caution to you all. I can get so caught up in my life of being governor that I don't worship God. Oh, I've got to go to this meeting. I've got to go to this meeting. If you'd see my schedule, it'd make you tired looking at it. I look back earlier in the year, and I had even my meal times are scheduled. I looked there one day, and it had lunch, 2:05 to 2:15. And so I am scheduled out all day long. If I don't schedule time for God, it doesn't happen. Nobody's calling me wanting to get on my calendar and say, I want to come in and pray with you. I want you to spend time with God. They want all kind of things. But all those things will detract. All those anxious things of governing Georgia, all those anxious decisions that have to be made, you know what they do? They steal time away from worship, personal worship with God. And they will in your lives as well. You're getting a great education here, and you go out and say, I'm building great habits into my life. But men and women, let me tell you something. Satan will steal your time of worship in the busyness of ministry if you let him. And your ministry will become hollow. It will become ineffective. It will become powerless if you don't spend the time in worship. So please don't ever get to the point that you think you can do the ministry on your own without the power. You've got to spend time in worship. Even though you have people in your home, things have to be done. Those things many times will take care of themselves. If you give time, God, give God his time for worship. Thirdly, talking about an attitude of service, an attitude of worship. In my book, Worship Trumps Service, and let me, you know what? If we are worshiping the way we should, do you not think God's going to take care of the service? God says in James, you know, I want your faith. I just don't want you so righteous you're no good. I want your faith to work itself out in service. So don't think that your worship will not lead to effective service. What I've found in my life, in my schedule, in my business, God is able to make me much more effective in shorter periods of time as I've given him his due. So remember, service, worship trumps service. I want to talk about the attitude of thoughts for a second, because I'm sad to tell you something you already know. Politicians get tripped up in their thought life. Preachers get tripped up in their thought life. It's an indictment on those of us who call ourselves Christians that we would see men and women of the gospel ministry fall by the wayside into immorality, usually sexual sins, but could be greediness, could be covetousness. All those, I think, are interrelated. But our thought life is important. You know, in the great commandment that we talk about, God tells us to love God with all of our heart has to be quickened with all of our minds, all of our soul, and all of our minds. Our minds will take our lives as we think. Our minds are like vacuums. They are going to be filled with something. And the church of Thyatira, I think, in Revelation, gets a huge indictment here. You know that God was talking through John here about the church who had become idolatrous in Revelation 2, verse 23, the church at Thyatira. He starts in verse 23 by saying the indicting. He told them, he said, look, you started off good. You had some great things, but there's some things I have against you. And then the indictment in verse 23, those that would go into immorality with Jezebel, he said he'd lay them on a sick bed, and great tribulation would come to them except they repent. In verse 23, and I will kill her children with death, and all the churches shall know that I am he who searcheth the minds and hearts, and I will give unto every one of you according to your works. You know, I love sports analogies, and I love sports metaphors, and we've always heard that I'm a football player, was a football player, love team sports, love football, and always heard that we ought to guard our minds and in that area. But I'm telling you, in football, I learned early on, guarding you think of as a defensive posture, do you not? Guarding. I learned early on in football that the best defense was what? A good offense. A good offense is the best defense. In fact, I'm holding up a book that's precious to all of us. Does God call this a sword or a shield? The sword of the word. Now, swords are to be used offensively. They're to be used to fill our minds, and then we've got the defense. But this sword is an offensive weapon that God will use in our lives. Let me just tell you something. You're here in a seminary preparing for the gospel ministry. If any of you think that you are a match for Satan, he's already deceived you. God has empowered us, has quickened us, and has empowered us, but only as we stay in his word, only as we use this sword to fend off the wiles of the devil will we be protected. I would want to use this as a in guarding my mind. It's like a vacuum. If I don't fill my mind with the things that are in this book and in fellowship with him, Satan will win the victory. I'm telling you that as a politician. I'm telling you that as a preacher. That will happen to each of us who think that we can stand on our own and not control our thought life. God has so much to say about our thought life. Philippians 2, you talk about in verse 3, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others but themselves. That attitude again. Let this mind be in you which is in Christ Jesus. Going on to talk about Christ submitting himself and humbling himself. We see that Matthew 22 talks again about the mind there. God is concerned about our hearts, certainly, and that's why he redeemed us, but he's also concerned about our minds, as we're in a culture that just wants to fill our minds with things that are not honoring to God. So my advice to you today would be to fill your minds and your thoughts with those things of God that come out of this book as the best protection there. And God will be able to, handle it. Again, that greatest commandment, love the Lord with all thy heart, thy soul, and thy mind, as we prepare to use the sword of the Spirit and able to fend off and guard. If we just hunker down saying, I'm saved, and think we've got a defensive position, Satan will eat our lunch. That's in the context of being a politician. It's in the context of being a preacher. Men and women preparing for the gospel ministry, go forth, strike out, be on the offense. We've got the ultimate weapon. We've got the ultimate answer. And we have the answer that mankind needs for all of us and for all of humanity. You're being prepared in a very special place with a special message. Have that attitude of service. but don't let it crowd out your attitude of worship. God will enhance your service as you enhance your worship toward Him. And then use this sword of the Spirit as an offensive weapon to fill our hearts, our thoughts, our minds as we go forth. Don't succumb to the thought life that Satan would trip us up on and be an indictment to the gospel ministry.